People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. Fine Music Radio, and this is People of Note. Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition. Let me tell you about my guest, Sven Rygrock. Now, you might know Sven if you saw the Spud films opposite people like John Cleese, where his role was that of Rambo, but also on stage you may have seen him as the disturbed young man in Peter Schaefer's play Equus earlier this year. Sven is back on stage at the Theatre on the Bay with Family Secrets, a play by Enrico Luttman, opposite Dorothy Ann Gould. And Sven, it's good to have you. I wanted to let people know who you were so they can build a picture of you in their minds as you chat. So welcome, a warm welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Do you find that those two, well, especially Rambo, do you find that that's a sort of instant recognition?
I think it is a big in, particularly in South Africa, for me. Absolutely.
I see you've done quite a few films because you've worked with some famous people like Orlando Bloom, for example, let alone John Cleese. And just now I'm going to ask you what it was like working with John Cleese. But I suppose I think of you primarily as a stage actor. How would you like to describe yourself?
Versatile.
Oh, that's a good answer.
I mean, did I get an A+ for that one? I think, to be honest, in South Africa, I don't think you can afford to choose. You got to be open to be able to do anything.
Including television, of course.
And children's theatre.
Oh, do you do a children's theatre?
Yes.
But you've got an interest in children, haven't you, and their development?
I do. Yes, I do. Particularly teenagers.
Just tell me a little bit about that before we go to the play.
So my big interest, I suppose, was through the church, where I was involved a lot with youth and development of youth. So we're looking at the ages of grade 8 until matric. So that's
14. You a fairly religious person?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Indeed. So I'm Catholic. And I got involved with youth, wanting to just help and also, to be honest, learn. I think the best way of learning is to be able to teach. So to be able to teach the faith to young people in a relatable way, which is tough because you've got to start to answer big questions for yourself. And through that, I got quite interested and quite involved with people's lives, particularly teenagers' lives. And from that, I started to, also through the role of Spud, I started to do talks, motivational talks. And I went from the poorest of the poor, places like Langa and Khayelitsha and speaking, to quite wealthy areas, southern suburbs, top ends like schools. And Rodney, I think the big thing that I found was that kids are unhappy. Kids are really unhappy. At the core, unhappy. Busy, there's a lot going on and far more now than in my day, but they're unhappy and they're filling it with stuff.
Can I ask you at this early stage in the interview how old you are?
Yes, I'm 28. Turned 28.
Just so that people know, we're talking to a young person saying what you just said about children, which is distressing, I have to say. Is this a result, do you think, of things like a lack of faith, social media, or politics? I suppose it's difficult to put your finger on maybe an unfair question, Sven.
Not really. I think, look, from my in, because I speak about a specific things, I do know the role that social media plays, and particularly the time spent on phones. I know that the world that it opens up, the good and the bad. But particularly, I've seen the role of the bad play out, not only just in my own life, but in many lives of teenagers. And I think it's also parenting, to be quite honest.
The interesting thing about the Catholic Church is its absolute, I almost want to say obsession, and I mean that in a positive way, of family values and keeping the family together in the traditional family way, which probably is where you also get some of your strength and ideas from.
Absolutely.
What sort of thing do you talk about when you go to talk to these people, the children?
The main topic that I speak about, which is bullying. But that's just a little topic that gives an in for teachers. But I think the main thing I talk about, which is what you're given a great life. You're given the gift of life. You didn't ask for it, but you're given it. And the big question that I leave with people is, what do you want to do with that gift? Because it is a gift. And I've seen 12-year-old people, and I've read about 12-year-old people who commit suicide, take their life. And I ask myself, what could go so wrong in a 12-year-old's life? So I leave them with things like speaking about, what does your life mean to you? Recognizing the value of your life with all its accolades and achievements, but with also all of its struggles and hardships, because I think that they are equally important. And a lot of emphasis is not placed there. We try to shy away from that. You know, we want the microwave mentality, which is put it in 2 minutes and must be gone, must be dealt with. I want immediate gratification. I want now. And a lot of suffering takes time.
And Sven, do you get what sort of feedback do you get? Do they ask you lots of questions? Do they sit sort of in blank amazement?
They ask a lot of questions. And that's, I suppose, a great value for me to see is the kind of questions that they ask. So I remember I did one recently up in Johannesburg, and this girl came up to me and she said, I now know, she said, sir, thank you. I now know what I really want. I want to be great. That's what I want.
Gosh, okay.
And that was amazing.
It must be amazing for you as well. As I said earlier, as a young man, to be able to have that impact on these young people and to see your impact actually working.
Yes, it is. Again, but I know that it doesn't come from me. I do know that I've been given the grace by God to be able to speak 100%.
Okay.
And I just have to be open to allow him to do his thing.
All right. Sven, I was going to talk to you about the play, which we're going to do now.
Yes.
But let's have your first piece of music. What have you chosen for us?
So my first piece of music is Baba Yetu, featuring the Soweto Gospel Choir by Christopher Tin. And I chose this piece of music because, so basically, I've decided that this is my playlist for our child, which is on its way in about 3 weeks' time.
Oh, really?
Yes. And why this song? Because this song for me is a start of hope, and particularly it is the Lord's Prayer. It is Our Father. Baba Yetu Yetu Liye Binguni Yetu Yetu Amina Baba Yetu Yetu Liye Mjina Lako Eli Tukuzwe
Baba Yetu Yetu Liye Minguni Yetu Yetu Amina Baba Yetu Yetu Liye Mjina Lako Eli Tukuzwe
Tupe leo chakula chetu Tunachohitaji utusamehe Makosa Yetu
Thank you.
the Soweto Gospel Choir, that piece called Baba Yetu, based on the Our Father, the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, the actor Sven Rygrok, who is on stage at the moment at the Theatre on the Bay in the play Family Secrets, a play by Enrico Luttman, opposite Dorothy Ann Gould. And let's just talk about that for a moment, Sven, before we get on to what seems to me to be a very interesting life that you lead. You seem to be attracted to quite meaty roles, don't you?
Yes.
I mean, nothing could be more meaty than Alan Strang, is it?
Absolutely.
In Equus, that must have been quite a role to do every night.
That was huge. And for me, it was a big part of my life. I knew about this role. Look, it came to me. I have to thank my drama teacher, Bev Cook Tomlinson, in grade 10, who gave me this piece. She gave me this piece to say, I think you should do a monologue from this play. And I remember reading the play, and I remember being deeply disturbed and moved all at the same time, which is a very weird thing to feel, to be quite honest. And then after I did a production up in Johannesburg with Fred Abramser, I remember just having a conversation with him and be like, it would be great to do this role. Not really thinking about what it would entail ever. And then that took a four-year development. It was on and off and rights and not rights and had to get it from production, which took 4 years. And then once it came onto the table and was all systems go, I went through the same audition process as everyone else. And that was daunting. That was very daunting. Why? Because we had to do the nudity scene. It's a big scene. It is a scene. And it's an important scene in the play. And for the audition, we had to do the audition in the nude, which was tough for me personally. But then doing this every single night, you realize that that's not the biggest thing. The biggest thing, is always finding truth and honesty and integrity in the play. But I did know that I had 4 years to discern whether or not I really wanted to do this, because it required a lot, not only of me mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, but also it had to deal, and it definitely dives into my faith.
Because I was going to say, a nude scene, that must have created, shall we say, a bit of a dilemma for you from a spiritual point of view?
Hugely.
How did you deal with that? Or is that private?
No. I'm happy to speak about it. So the first thing at the time, my girlfriend at the time, which is now my wife, we discussed it at length, at great length. We then took it to prayer. I think for me that's incredibly important. The next thing is I have spiritual directors, and I take it to them. And again, they can never offer, say what you should or should not do, but they encourage and they advise. And again, then I took it to some philosophers and theologians.
My goodness. I went into it.
Because it's the nature of, I have a moral obligation here. And this is why I love theater, because theater tells great stories. It has the opportunity to. But when telling a story, you are condoning whatever the message may be. So I remember the philosopher saying to me that it depends on the nature of the themes. So if the play is presenting something negative, that nudity is good and everyone should take off their clothes, and you know that copulating with animals is a good thing, I wouldn't be able to be involved with this. But if the play is steering away from that to say, look at the nature of what does it mean to worship, to love, how we can twist that, and that it is not a good thing if it is twisted, then I think it's something worth looking at, because I think people need to hear that. Because I think a lot of, and particularly with the work that I do, things are twisted. Truth is twisted to what suits us. And I think in there lies the great rub for me. And I think that role was eye-opening.
Would you regard it as a bit of a highlight in your career at the moment?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Are you happy with your decision that you went ahead with it and that you did the nude scenes?
Yes. And again, it was wonderful, because the nude scenes wasn't what actually took a toll on me in the end, which I thought it would be. And I remember, so in Johannesburg, they brought a lot of school students who were studying the play in drama. And I remember one girl from an old girls' school saying, it was very weird. The nudity wasn't what upset me at all, because I found you the most vulnerable with your clothes on. And I went, ooh.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And that speaks to the nature of Peter Schaffer's writing and what it is saying. And I think for me that was incredible.
Gosh, That must have been, I mean, that would have given you some food for thought.
Yeah.
why she reacted like that.
Absolutely.
But now, by contrast, playing Inspud as Rambo, I didn't see the film, I hate to tell you. Was it a very, very different sort of role? Was it a role that had a dark side?
There was a bit of a dark side, but it's something that I use in bullying. So Rambo is seen as quite a bully. I mean, he's the head of the pack, the leader of the gang. And I have to say it's quite hilarious because I remember casting for this in the beginning. And one of the big things was that they found me too short. I'm very short. I'm 6 foot. Wow, that would be great. I'm 5'6". So I'm short. I'm a short man. And I remember they were like, So they made me read for Bogo, a character in Spud, and they made me read for other characters. And eventually they decided, fine. But my first day, Rodney, on set, here I am. I'm a movie star. I've made it now. They've dyed my hair. I thought this was the best thing ever. I'm trying to find my school shoes. I'm trying to find my school shoes because I know what we went for wardrobe fitting. And there in the corner, I find these stilettos. Like ABBA stilettos. Full on. I'm like 5 centimeters high. They made me wear these stilettos. My first scene was running down the corridor, being all butch and boyky. And I had to throw a rugby ball. And I sprint down this corridor and my stilettos completely just peel off. And it's all slow-mo. And I just bail on my face. And that was my introduction as Rambo in the Spud films.
What an extraordinary story. But why stilettos?
I think, so it's like what Tom Cruise does. So he steps on boxes. So when he acts with other people, particularly in a close-up shot, he always wants to be a little bit higher. So he doesn't look out of proportion.
Yeah.
And these boys were younger than me. I was 18 at the time. And I was shorter than them. So they kind of just wanted to even me out a bit, and he needed to have this presence of being that domineering, strong bully.
Yeah.
And often in schools, the typical cliche would be a strong, big, tall, you know, guy, like a rugby player. And then there was this short Sven.
So Short Sven. And I wonder if that also inspired you a little bit about the whole bullying thing that you talk about with children.
It did, but not that. Surprisingly, not Rambo. The thing that inspired it was a couple of things. One, seeing that kids are unhappy, but two, an experience that I had when I was 14 years old, when I did a cereal commercial for the UK, and we shot it down in Cape Town. They flew me and my dad down, had a great time, shot for 5 days. It was lovely. And 6 months later, this commercial got released, just in the UK. And Rodney, it went viral. But people hated this commercial. Absolutely, they couldn't stand it. So much so that it picked up traction online. It was sent around schools, billboards, office parks, you name it. And what had happened was that they started to say, like, no, this poor, whoever's in this commercial, he must be filled with regret, and surely he must have killed himself by now. Like, he must have been at least bullied. And some of the rumors, they're great. Some of the rumors was that I had stuck pencils up my nose and slammed my head on a desk. Another one of the great rumors is that my parents were dying of cancer, and it was their last dying wish for me to be in this cereal commercial. But it got so bad that they actually tracked me down. Interviewers tracked me down, and they managed to find where I stayed. My name got released, and I had to release a public statement to say that I'm alive and well, living in South Africa. But the comments online were vicious. And I remember the dilemma that my parents had to go through, because that's a hard thing for any parent. And what do you do? What do you do for your 14-year-old child? Do you tell them? Do you pretend that it didn't happen? Do you expose them? But then, they may struggle with self-worth. And I think my parents dealt incredibly well with it. They sat me down. We looked at the computer, and they're like, are you sure you want to do this? And I was 14, naive. I'm like, yeah, please, whatever. And they sat either side of me, and we trolled for a little bit, maybe 30 minutes. And all the comments like, oh my word, he needs to slap. I wish we shot him in the knees, like slapped him. It just went on. And I share this with kids because this story is not unique. People always go, oh, wow, like how could, and I go, please spare me the drama. This happens every day on Instagram, on WhatsApp chat groups, and Snapchat. Yeah. And it's the message that people leave behind that's important, because sure, you can delete the picture, erase the image, delete the post. But once somebody has received it, the hurt, that never goes away. And that's the story that I really share with people.
My goodness, Sven. I feel a bit exhausted. But thank you for sharing that. Gosh, sure. Tell us about your next piece of music so we can recover a bit.
We can recover a little bit. I don't know about too much. My next piece of music is Jenny of Old Stones. It's actually from the Game of Thrones Season 8. I found this piece of music, and what I like to do, particularly with each role that I play, is I like to find pieces of music that fit the role or fit the scene. So for me, this song came quite later on and helped me just push through, particularly in Joburg, because you get quite tired performing night after night. And this song really was Alan's song, because I find it very difficult to relate to Alan's love and worship for horses. And I don't share that. But this piece of music moved my soul. And I immediately connected and I was like, wow, every night when I touch the horse Nugget, who Alan is enamored with, I will play this piece of music as a backtrack in my mind. And that's how I like to perform to pieces of music. So this is Jenny of Old Stones from Game of Thrones.
Music there from that extraordinary series Game of Thrones, and that was called Jenny of Old Stones. The second choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Sven Rygrock, who is on stage at the Theatre on the Bay at the moment in the play Family Secrets, along with Dorothy Ann Gould. But before we talk about, I keep not talking about the play, I have to ask you what it was like working with John Cleese, because so many of us who were brought up on Monty Python, well, not brought up because it was sort of in the 70s, I think, but who loved Monty Python, and then the subsequent things he's done. He's a bit of an icon, but we also hear that he's a bit of a difficult person. So what was your experience with the great John Cleese?
So I have to start off with the fact that I never enjoyed Monty Python. I'm going to just make that very clear. I was like, what is this? What is going on with these crazy people and using coconuts? I don't like Fawlty Towers.
Yes, well, there you go.
Fawlty Towers, now, that me and my dad, we used to watch and we used to absolutely love. I remember very clearly the first day he came and he arrived on set. We were busy having lunch under the pavilion in Michael House, I think it was at the time. And he joined us just to say hi and say hi to the crew. And I just remember a whole bunch of people surrounding him and laughing. Big, I'm talking about big belly laughs. Ha, 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 ha. And I was like, oh, really? I mean, is he funny? Are you laughing because he's funny? Or is he John Cleese? And then he came up and he said, hi, hello, hello, listen, shook all of our hands one by one. Hello, I'm John Cleese, John Cleese, John, lovely, lovely. I don't want to interact too much with you boys. I'd like to keep our distance, keep our distance. And I was like, well, that sucks. That's not what I expected, but cool, whatever. And I have to say, then over the series, he just became like the best, and I don't mean this in any patronizing way, but a proper like grandfather. He would sit us down in between takes and we would all like gather around him and he would tell us stories. And he's funny, he's witty, he's sharp, and he's got a sharp tongue. And I think that was what I remember of him. So I remember him with great fondness.
Oh, that's good
and
to know.
Very, and very generous. He was very generous.
Yeah, I know, that's good to know, Sven. Yeah. Because one does hear very negative things about him. I know he can be very, very difficult. And also to journalists and radio presenters and so on. But now I would like to talk about this play before we go on about you. There's a lot I still want to find out about you, so you're still being grilled here. But tell me a little bit about this play and the role you play in it, Family Secrets.
So it is an Italian playwright. And it was written in Italian, and it's been translated subsequently. And it is a story about a mother and son. I play the role of Adamo, who's a young 28-year-old man who is a writer for a soap opera, or as they say, like a TV series, a telenovela. And he's just lost his job because he actually fancies himself a playwright. So what does he do, as all young men do when they have no idea what to do, is he goes back home with mum. And it basically is the development of their relationship. And subsequently, what comes out is things that they have been hiding from each other. And it is a beautiful story. And it is a beautiful story about life and family.
Is it humorous? Is it grueling? Is it tragic?
So it's very, it is a comedy, but I would say it's a comedy of life in the Italian sense. So if people are coming to think that it's stand-up, it is not stand-up. It is a comedy of life, meaning that it has ups and downs and turns and twists, but it is heartfelt. And I think a lot of people can relate to it. It also speaks to the value of life.
Okay, so you come away from the theater having been made to think.
Yes.
But also sort of feeling quite good about yourself in the play.
I don't know about feeling quite good, but hopefully you think, and I would imagine you would come away with a sense of, again, what does my life mean to me? Mm-hmm. And what does my family actually mean to me? Not just, I mean, we throw that word around, oh, family matters, you know, and family is as thick as, what do they say? What is the
thieves.
Thick as thieves.
I think.
But when push comes to shove, I think often tragedy, illness, death, brings out a lot of what you really value and where is your family currently now? Where do you stand with your family? And maybe there are things that you're struggling to reconcile with, or maybe you have a very open relationship, or maybe it's estranged or hard.
I think I can tell why you're attracted to this play, judging from what you've said. I also, because I read somewhere that a well-written play is something that really does appeal to you. Mm-hmm. And these interesting characters, this is not just any old play. Something appealed to you when you read it that you must have thought, I wouldn't mind doing this. I can do
this.
Yes,
yes. So, it was maybe a very unconscious thought, but at the time that I read it, my aunt was going through chemotherapy. And it speaks a lot about to cancer. And I suppose for me it was a thought of what would it be like? Because sometimes I have difficulty relating to things that I do not know. And often when you get to play a character, you get to just touch your toe in, I think you get deep empathy for something that you may not have ever experienced. Or maybe I will. I don't know. Hopefully not, but you never know. And I think for me it spoke to that. And I remember my mom reading it when I first got it. And I remember her being in tears and being like, it's a lovely play.
And you're playing opposite a real sort of legend, whom I haven't seen on stage for a long time, Dorothy Ann Gould,
yes.
Who is so powerful on stage. I mean, is that in any way intimidating or is it inspiring possibly?
So inspiring, absolutely. Intimidating very much in the get-go. I was like, because I know her name. I mean, this is like a theater legend.
A doyen,
absolutely. So I definitely know her name. And I think when I started, I was quite nervous and I wasn't sure. And I have to say, our director, Alan, and herself, they put me very much at ease. And I will remember, she suggested that we meet to have a read-through, just her and I. And we met at her home and we had a chat about life and about family, as one does. And again, with acting, this is what I love, is that you have to be very open. You have to get to know somebody incredibly intimately, incredibly quickly, in such a short pace of like time. So again, we divulge information and freely. And particularly when you get to know someone and you get to trust that person, it's very easy to do so. And Dorothy, just in her passing, she said, "I don't like to make a play about me. I always try and focus on the other person. And before I go on, I like to just say a quick prayer to just like offer it up to God, and also to maybe pray or play for someone." And at that moment, Ronnie, my jaw dropped, because it's something that I do. I really like to pray, particularly beforehand, giving thanks, because I do find that theater is a very sacred space. And the ritual speaks very much to the Catholic Church. And also to pray or offer up an intention for someone specifically every night. And when I'm playing like 8 shows a week, that's eight opportunities I get to root myself, to ground myself and be like, what am I doing here? Because sometimes you can get lost, and sometimes you can be like, what's the grocery shopping list like? And yes, have I did it? And sometimes just having a prayer intention draws you back. And when she said that, I was like, wow, I found a partner to play with, to spar with. And she has been nothing but generous. And I have to say, incredibly humble. I've learned humility from her.
And you working with Alan Swerdler as your director,
yes,
who's so experienced and has done all sorts of plays and is really an extraordinary man as well in many, many ways.
Absolutely. And just a wealth of knowledge that comes out of that man's head. I do not know. Where does he get all the stuff from? He's like a walking encyclopedia.
Let's have another piece of music, Mr. Rygrock.
Yes. So this other piece actually is more, it speaks more to the title, called The Gravel Road by James Newton Howard. It is from the soundtrack of The Village. And particularly I like The Gravel Road, speaking to life. That life is not smooth. Sometimes it is sharp and gravelly, and means it's difficult. And particularly for my child, I would like to leave that life is not always going to be easy, but how you choose to travel that road is completely up to you. Thank you.
That piece was called The Gravel Road, James Newton Howard there. It was the third choice of my guest here on People of Note on Fine Music Radio this week, the actor Sven Rygrock. As I've been saying, he's in the play Family Secrets along with Dorothy Ann Gould, a play by Enrico Luttman. You mentioned just as we went into that song, and you also mentioned it a while ago, Sven, that you have a baby on the way.
Yes.
When is that going to happen?
In about 3 weeks. So the due date is the 25th of July.
Okay. And it's your first, is it?
It is our first, yes.
Look, your face is lit up, may I just say to people, absolutely lit up. And it sounds as though you're really looking forward to this. And it sounds also as though he's coming to a good home.
Oh, I don't know about that. I hope so. I hope so. I am very excited. I'm incredibly nervous too. I think a first-time father. It was so funny. We were in a shopping mall yesterday, my wife and I, and I was looking at this father holding this newborn. And I was like, he looks like a father. He's got glasses on. Like, you know, he's in his late 30s. I'm like, wow, that guy. Like, and I paused and I took like a complete in-breath. That's me. That is me.
In 3 weeks' time.
And I still feel like, yeah, I feel like I'm 12 and in 3 weeks' time. So, yes. So we don't know the sex of our child. We're going to wait.
Good, I'm glad.
I'm very excited for that. I'm very nervous because I know that, again, a lot of, and this is, I always see this in people's faces. They're like, either they do one of two things. Either they get very excited for life or they do the big smile and then the, shame. I know it's coming your way.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. And you can see it. I don't even have to communicate it. But I'm very excited.
What does your wife do? Is she involved in the acting world at all?
Not at all. She is a teacher. She's a high school teacher.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. And I'm very grateful for that.
Sven, just let me catch up a bit with you and your background. As a fairly young man, which you are, have had a huge amount of success. Where did it all begin? Because did I read somewhere that you were a gymnast?
Yes, you read correctly. So it's all started with gymnastics. I started at the age of 3 doing something called monkey gymnastics in creche. And they found a little bit of a talent in me, and they decided to take me to a place called Ernest Ullman Park, where my Hungarian coach took me on from about the age of 6. And I would be training 6 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Good grief.
So that was my life. That was particularly a lot of my end of primary school towards through all the way until up until matric. That was my training. I got to travel around the world. I've got my Protea colors. The aim was Olympics. I went to all Africa Games in Egypt. I did training camps in Hungary, and I got to travel to Germany, England, etc. So I saw the world definitely through gymnastics, and it was a form of discipline. It was something that I really loved. I think without it, I would have been a cheeky bugger. I mean, that's the nicest way of putting it.
Okay.
I would have been really not a good
kid.
But
did you enjoy it? I mean, that was a major part of your life.
Yes and no. I think what I loved was routine. Mm-hmm. I think every child really, deep down, they'll hate it and they'll rebel against it, loves routine. And gymnastics is very routine-based. You start your warm-up, you train, and you work. It's like pianos. And some days, you don't get it. No matter how hard you try, and the next day, boom, oh, there you go, there's that move, that whatever. But there's also an element of danger, which I thoroughly love, which is trusting your body. At some point, you are flying through the air, doing triple, double twists, releasing a piece of like bar behind you and hoping that you don't smash your shins or land funny. And there is a big sense of trust. And I think that sense of elevation, that sense of almost flying, brought me such joy.
Do you still do gymnastics?
No, I don't. So I had a really bad accident, and this is what led me into the acting world. So my mother she studied acting. So the arts was always in our family. My dad is also an incredible artist and very creative. So growing up, I stayed fit and poetry, but it was never something that I loved. Gymnastics was it, be all, end all. I wanted to go overseas to America, study something like psychology and just train. That was the plan. Until I went overseas, I was probably, I think, just before matric. And I went to Hungary and we did a training camp in Hungary for 3 weeks. And there I dislocated my knee. Completely. And it was funny because at the time that it happened, I was doing a triple twist on the trampoline. I had finished all my work. I was just playing around, mucking around. Typical. And I remember screaming, yelling. And I remember seeing my coach's face. And the typical, oh, there goes Sven again. That was the face that he gave me. Oh, there goes Sven. Drama queen. Until I let go of my knee. And he saw that it was lying at a 90-degree angle. And then I will never forget just the blood rushing down from his face, being completely pale, and he ran up to me and had to actually pull the ligament back in place. So that happened when I was about in matric. I had to have surgery. And that kind of took me out of gymnastics completely. And that was when I decided, well, what am I going to study? Because now all my friends are, I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm studying at UCT. Going to this. Or whatever. And I'm like, well, I've got a messed up knee. I don't know where I'm going. So I applied for drama school. And the reason was, what could I do that I fairly enjoy that requires the least amount of work? And I was like, great. Acting. I mean, you just play, right? Cool. So I did. And I got into UCT and I moved down from Joburg to Cape Town. And there I was there for 2 weeks until I got the role of Rambo and I had to pull out.
Really? Is that
yes,
how it happened?
That's how it happened. So I got the call. I was 2 weeks into lectures, hardly. I mean, I just met everyone, you know, oh, this is my new class. Get very excited. I was staying at a place called Marquard, so it was called in UCT. And literally I got a call from my agent at the time to say, listen, you've got the role.
So you already had an agent, having not actually been on stage before.
Yes, but they were a talent agent. So they were more just for commercials. A lot of people on their books hoping that one kid or two kids will make, you know, ends meet for the month. So that's how it happened.
So had you already done some commercials at that stage?
Yes, I had done some commercials.
Including that famous one.
Including that famous one, yes.
Okay. Gosh, and then did it, after Rambo, did that kind of kickstart your career, for want of a better word?
So I don't know how to answer that question because I will never know. I will never know. But the feeling was absolutely not. I remember 8 weeks we were shooting in the Midlands. I met new people, working with crazy people. I loved the film industry. And then once it was done, I came back to nothing. I didn't have varsity friends. I didn't have a degree. I have a matric. I didn't have a place to stay. I moved out of UCT, so went back to mom and dad. And there I was. I remember washing dishes, going like, I've just done a film. No
I'm
one
famous.
Knows me. I'm famous.
And here
yeah, I'm washing dishes.
Without a job.
Yes. And I think that for me was very hard.
What was your first stage role? Can you remember?
Yes. Midsummer Night's Dream at Maynardville with Fred Abramson.
With Fred Abramson.
Playing the role of Puck.
Let's just talk about the influence Fred had on your life after your next piece of music.
Yes.
My Name is Lincoln.
Yes. So the next piece is My Name is Lincoln. And this is actually the opening for my playlist for Family Secrets, which is just quite hopeful, quite light, and it fills me with a lot of joy.
Thank you.
that was called My Name is Lincoln, Steve Jablonski. And yes, another choice, the fourth choice of my guest, Sven Rygrock. Sven, in the short time we have left before the end of the program, timing in radio is very important, as it is in theatre, as you know. Yes. One of the things I saw, we've spoken a lot about your background, but I noticed that you did, in fact, work in the UK for a while, and apparently you struggled immensely, came back filled with humility. Is this what happened?
This is very much what happened. So I went with big stars in my eyes, thinking, of course, I'm going to land in the UK, and they're going to know my name, and I'm going to get a role somewhere, maybe on EastEnders or something. And I landed, and no one was willing to take the bite. I managed to find myself an agent. But I ended up working at a theater, the Apollo Theater in Shaftesbury Avenue, as an usher, and that is where I fell in love with theater. And I met my idol in theater. His name is Mark Rylance, and I watched him perform night after night. But I tried to get a couple of auditions, which I managed to do, but they failed miserably, and I got a call from my agent to say how I cannot represent somebody who's so arrogant, who goes in and doesn't know their lines, or chooses. I had to choose a piece of music, a rock piece of music. I'm not a singer. Let me just put that out right now. And I had to sing because they wanted to do a contemporary rock kind of like sing song, like Glee almost, but with period costume. And I had to sing a rock song. And I didn't know anything but like Prime Circle from South Africa. So here I am in this audition room singing Prime Circle, which I can't sing. And I got a phone call to say, absolutely not. And they actually ditched me. They said, I will not. And it was a hard time. It was a very hard time. I was lonely with zero money, done a couple of films. But again, no one gosh, knew me, and no one cared.
Bit of a wake-up call almost. Absolutely. And then you came back, and then things started to happen.
Well, I came back tail between my legs. And I think I knew then that if I wanted this enough, I'd have to work.
But Sven, you're on a bit of a roll at the moment, and you're taking on really interesting roles. Sorry, that's silly. Two meanings for that word. Taking on two different, very various roles, which, as you said, being versatile and all that. So I'm looking forward to seeing Family Secrets. This is the play that you're in with Dorothy Ann Gould by Enrico Luttman. It's on at the Theatre on the Bay until the 13th of July. So go along and have a look. Go and see two fine actors, Sven and Dorothy, in what you say, Sven, is an absorbing play, certainly. Mm-hmm. And I always like to ask my guests towards the end what they do to relax, because a lot of people I speak to lead quite intense lives, which I think you do, judging from your body language. You're quite sort of active. Yes. How do you relax? What do you do to sit back and just relax?
Rodney, a good cup of tea.
You're joking.
No. A good cup. But I'm talking like you got to have the full kit. I'm talking like teapot, tea cozy. You have to warm up the cups prior to with a little bit of hot water and have a little cup on the side so you can pour the hot water into that cup. You know, you don't want the cup to get cold and your tea to get cold. So I think a good cup of tea, I like to sit down and with me and my wife and we just have a chat. That's my
Do you
best.
Play any instruments? You said you're not a singer.
I can sing in the shower. That's as far as it goes. Instruments, I can play a little bit of guitar and a little bit of piano, but I am no master at either.
Okay. Sven, it's been great talking to you. It really has. It's been refreshing, may I say. Yeah. And I hope to see you again sometime. But you've chosen an unexpected piece to end, Nimrod, from the Enigma Variations by Sir Edward Elgar, sort of out the blue. Mm-hmm. There must be a story. There must be a reason.
There is. Again, this is for my child, to let you know that your mother has great taste, and this was her choice. She is far more cultured than I will ever be.
Oh, you let your wife choose one of your pieces.
I did, absolutely.
So this is for your wife and your child and for you.
Yes.
The beautiful Nimrod from the Enigma Variations by Sir Edward Elgar, ending People of Note today. And Sven Rygrock, thanks. All the best.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions. Escape the cold this winter with some fiery Italian passion as Peter Turin presents Family Secrets at Theatre on the Bay. Directed by Alan Swerdlow, Family Secrets is a sincere and entertaining story of a mother and son who face secrets which will change their lives forever. That's Family Secrets, starring Dorothy Ann Gould and Sven Rygrock, from the 3rd to the 13th of July, only at Theatre on the Bay. Book now. FMR.